Hello, and welcome to the reading of the Sioux City Journal for Thursday, June 4th, 2020. I'm your reader, Amy B. We've got Mutt the cat on the table next to me, and Dibs is snoring in the living room, so now we're ready to read. Let's start out with the weather in Sioux City. Today, a high of 86 and a low of 64 with thunderstorms expected this evening. Friday in Sioux City, a high of 84 and a low of 64. Saturday in Sioux City, a high of 84 and a low of 71. Sunday in Sioux City, a high of 90 and a low of 75. Monday, a high of 89 and a low of 63. Now let's turn to today's mini editorial. This comes to us from Randall Washburn of Sioux City. The best gesture to bring this country together at this juncture would be for Donald Trump to resign and turn the leadership over to Vice President Mike Pence. And that opinion was from Randall Washburn of Sioux City. Now let's turn to today's front page stories. The first one is entitled, COVID-19 cases up on reservations. This one's by Nick Heitrek of the Journal. The number of new COVID-19 cases continued to climb Wednesday in Nebraska's Thurston County, in large part because of a recent burst of cases on the Winnebago Indian Reservation and a steady increase on the Omaha Indian Reservation. Together, the Winnebago and Omaha cases add up to 95 of Thurston County's 110 total cases. The county's one death attributed to COVID-19 was a Winnebago resident. The Winnebago Comprehensive Healthcare System reported 42 cases of the respiratory illness through Tuesday, an increase from 19 a week earlier. 8 patients have recovered. The neighboring Omaha reservation had 53 cases, 29 of them active, through Tuesday, according to Carl T. Curtis Health Education Center in Macy. Tribe members living in other counties have also tested positive, the health center said, but are not included in Thurston County's total. The increase in Winnebago is not a big surprise, said Emily Longuski, communications manager at Winnebago Comprehensive Healthcare System. Increased testing for the virus has led to an increase in positive cases, as has been the case in several other Siouxland locations. She said some Winnebago residents work in nearby meatpacking plants that have experienced COVID-19 outbreaks. Other Winnebago residents are at higher risk because of health issues. We know our population is more of a high-risk community because of underlying conditions like diabetes and also multi-generational households, Longuski said. Those multi-generational households, which can hold several family members of all ages, are conducive to the spread of the virus. Julie Rother, health director of the Northeast Nebraska Public Health Department, which covers Thurston, Wayne, Cedar, and Dixon counties, said that across her district, one of the biggest risk factors is living with someone who contracts the virus. Rother said the Memorial Day holiday weekend, when many people left their homes as Nebraska began relaxing some of its restrictions on businesses and services, also is partly to blame for recent cases in the district. The health department is working with both reservations to organize additional testing, and Longuski said Winnebago health officials will continue efforts to educate residents, some of whom are hard to reach because they do not have internet service, computers, or phones. Thurston County's increase comes as the number of new COVID-19 cases has slowed in the Sioux City metro area. Siouxland District Health Department on Wednesday reported one new death in Woodbury County, raising the county's death toll to 37. 2 new cases were reported, and 13 tests were performed. In Dakota County, 6 new COVID-19 cases were reported. Now I'm going to tell you what's on a graphic they have here, which shows the coronavirus. Why can't I talk today? Sorry. The coronavirus cases in our area. South Dakota has a total of 5,162. Nebraska has a total of 14,866. Iowa has a total of 20,300. In our area, these are the county positive COVID-19 cases. Yankton County, South Dakota has 51. Clay County, South Dakota has 15. Union County, South Dakota has 92. In Nebraska, Cedar County has 8. Wayne County has 20. Dixon County has 33, Thurston County has 110, Dakota County has 1,689. In our area of Iowa, positive COVID-19 cases in Lyon County are 25, Osceola County 34, Dickinson County 27, Sioux County 290, O'Brien County 36, Clay County, Iowa, 21, Plymouth County, 139, Cherokee County, 36, Buena Vista County, 917, Woodbury County, 2,817, Ida County, 14, Sac County, 25, Monona County, 25, Crawford County, 530. All right, turning back to the front page, we're going to look at another big front page story, and that's about Steve King. This one is written by Brett Hayworth of the Journal. Journal analysis: mail votes, King's loss of clout, help fuel Feenstra victory. Hull, Iowa, Randy Feenstra, in attempting the huge task of unseating 18-year Representative Steve King, sought to appeal to the fiscal conservative wing of the Republican Party, and some right-center business groups responded with financial report. Feenstra and his allies thereby touted his resume during his 3 terms in the state Senate. He also discovered the pull that the endorsement that conservative Christian group leader Bob Vanderplatz can deliver. On top of that, several Iowa politicals told the Journal the unforeseen factor of the novel coronavirus pandemic prompted state election officials to mail absentee ballots to all registered voters. The expanded ballot access helped attract 20,000 to 30,000 voters in the 4th District who rarely, if ever, voted in a Republican Party primary. Feenstra particularly appealed to those voters. Additionally, while King was a full-throated critic of so-called never-Trumpers, President Donald Trump didn't reciprocate with support as King fought for his political life in the tightly contested 4th District primary. Just 4 years earlier, King co-chaired Trump's presidential campaign in Iowa. King, for over 2 decades, had been a reliable voice for conservative causes, such as a tough immigration policy, defending gun rights, and cutting taxes. But he went down to defeat to Feenstra, a state senator from Hull, by a margin of almost 10% on Tuesday. While incumbents in Congress rarely lose, when your own party leaders are openly against you, your opponent out-fundraises you by a margin of more than 3-1, it suggests you are in serious trouble as a candidate. University of Northern Iowa Professor Chris Larimer said on Wednesday. In May, Trump had announced his support for 2 Iowa Republican congressional candidates, Ashley Hinson in the 1st District and David Young in the 3rd. Then, on Tuesday morning, Trump tweeted out endorsements for more than 10 Republican officeholders who were in primaries, including Congressman Dusty Johnson and U.S. Senator Mike Rounds in South Dakota, but the president never signaled any support for King. And while Iowa Republican Party Chairman Jeff Kaufman issued a report in support of Feenstra shortly after the win, party leaders and elected officials stayed neutral during the primary. That was unlike 2016 when Rick Bertrand, who was then a state senator from Sioux City, ran against King, and U.S. Senators Joni Ernst and Charles Grassley, plus Governor Kim Reynolds, got on board with King's candidacy. As Feenstra told the Journal last week, that neutrality and not siding with King spoke volumes this year. After a late election night, Feenstra returned to Des Moines Wednesday as the state legislature restarted its session interrupted by COVID-19. On the drive to the state capitol, Feenstra shared on Twitter a photo of him taking a congratulations call from Trump. "Thanks to @RealDonaldTrump for the phone call. We are going to run hard, win in November, and elect a congressman who delivers," Feenstra tweeted. Feenstra got 36,797 votes for 45.6%, while King had 28,977 votes for 35.9%. Three other candidates took the rest of the votes, with Jeremy Taylor, a Sioux City former legislator, at 7.8%, former Irwin, Iowa Mayor Brett Richards with 7.4%, and Steve Reeder, a real estate developer from Arnold's Park, at 3%. King's campaign did not respond to an interview request, and he last week told the Journal, "People know what I stand for and believe in, and I hope they remember the type of work that I have the blessing to do for them." However, Woodbury County Republican Party Chairwoman Susan Stewart on Wednesday said King had increased baggage since losing his committee seats in January 2019, right as his new term began. "The loss of committees drove people to reconsider, particularly when there were other conservative candidates available." Towards the end of the campaign, on debates sponsored by local small-town radio stations, the congressman mentioned that he would have the opportunity to reapply for the committees. If the congressman could have made a case for this earlier, that might have changed the outcome, but probably not a lot, Stewart said. The committee's stripping came after, in a New York Times story on immigration, King was quoted as asking, "White nationalist? White supremacist? Western civilization? How did that language become offensive? Why did I sit in classes teaching me about the merits of our history and our civilization?" The published remarks fueled a national backlash. King has repeatedly insisted the Times reporter misquoted him, and that Republican leaders were too skittish over the fallout to reinstate him to his committees. Representative King's wounds and liabilities are all self-inflicted. The loss of committee assignments in early 2019 signaled that he was viewed as a malignancy by the leadership of his party. There's really no coming back from a development of that type, especially when we learned that there was no foundation for his claim that his committee assignments would be restored, Buena Vista University professor Bradley Best said. The primary victory by Feenstra doesn't immediately end King's political career, as his House term runs 7 more months. And while Democrats, who had long ago grown to despise King for incendiary comments, chortled over his loss, their chances to win the GOP voter-rich 4th District in November through nominee J.D. Scholten lessened greatly, University of Iowa professor Tim Hagel said. Hagel added, "If King won the primary, there would be a reasonable chance the Democrats could pick up the seat." Scholten, in a Wednesday fundraising appeal, wrote, "We're on to November against Randy Feenstra, a corporate-backed career politician who's already made it clear that he'll sell Iowa's 4th District to the highest bidder." Some perspective: if Feenstra beats Scholten, he will be the first Sioux County resident to serve in the U.S. House since 1965, when Charles Hoven of Alton wrapped a 2-decade tenure in that chamber. Some unease with King had cropped up over King's narrow win of 3% over Scholten in 2018. Woodbury County's Stewart said, As the primary campaign cycle went on, some Republicans became more visible with their King discontent, withholding campaign money. As it became clear late Tuesday that Feenster would win, Nick Ryan, who ran the Team Iowa PAC that delivered money to Republicans over the last decade, tweeted out, "Love watching these results. King is getting crushed. Proud of you, Iowa." Feenster used the Victory Enterprises political consulting team based in Davenport, Iowa, to help steer his campaign. Brian Dumas, the CEO of Victory Enterprises, said the Secretary of State decision to mail every registered voter an absentee ballot request due to COVID-19 dramatically changed turnout in two ways. First, Dumas said, the number of expected primary voters jumped from 50,000 to what looks to be nearly 81,000. Plus, it dramatically changed the type of Republican that voted. He said, normally primaries are dominated by what we would call a 2-4 primary voter, meaning the Republican has voted in at least two of the last four GOP primaries. However, as of Monday, there were over 23,000 absentee ballots returned from voters who had not voted in any of the last four Republican primaries, resulting in a huge anomaly, Dumas said. He added, we were able to adjust in real time because of the grassroots, digital, and financial infrastructure we had built. For the entire year of 2019, King amassed $263,322, far below the $721,427 raised by Feenstra. As the year ended, Feenstra had nearly $500,000 in cash available, or 15 times King's figure. That cash resulted in a slew of campaign ads, primarily in Sioux City, but later in other markets, touting Feenstra's conservative credentials. Sarah Chamberlain, treasurer of Defending Main Street Super PAC and CEO of Republican Main Street Partnership PAC, led support by those Washington-based groups to plow money in support of Feenstra. Chamberlain said Feenstra held business world bona fides and key clout from serving as Iowa Senate Ways and Means Committee chairman. He is socially conservative and fiscally conservative. That's great. That's what the district requires, Chamberlain said. And she added that Feenstra could credibly be seen as a good alternative to or substitute for King. Chamberlain said the Defending Main Street messaging was on Feenstra's record of accomplishments, and leaving aside King's controversial statements on race and other topics, since Iowa Republicans know those cold. Chamberlain said she knew Feenstra had the goods to defeat King from her first meeting with him, noting that she wrote a $5,000 check from Washington on the spot. After meeting Randy and talking to Randy, I saw a path to victory, she said. We have a pathway for the first time in 18 years to take Steve King out. Okay, here's a local story from South Dakota, which is by the journal. Noam floats idea of police reforms in light of Floyd death. South Dakota governor says she will examine the state's policing laws. South Dakota Governor Kristi Noem on Wednesday said she will be examining the state's policing laws in light of what she called the gut-wrenching death of George Floyd. The Republican governor stuck to a conservative approach to the issue and didn't have many specifics on policies she would like to see changed. She acknowledged that a pressing problem was revealed by the death of Floyd, a handcuffed black man who died in Minneapolis last week after a white police officer pressed his knee into Floyd's neck for several minutes as Floyd pleaded for air and eventually stopped moving. Video of the arrest sparked peaceful protests and civic unrest in cities throughout the country. Personally, I haven't even been able to make it through the video yet, she said. It's been gut-wrenching to watch. The governor said Floyd's death and the ensuing protests had made their point, but she spent much of the time at a news conference echoing conservative talking points, the need for personal responsibility, local control of policy changes, and family values. She mentioned that she would look into changing laws on contract negotiations with police unions, civil asset forfeiture laws, and the use of police body cameras. Most reforms would have to come through the legislature, which won't meet in a regular session until January. We are sitting down with an open mind, examining the data and the facts around each of these policies, she said. National Guard troops were deployed in 3 South Dakota cities after police destroyed property, after people destroyed property and threw rocks at police in Sioux Falls on Sunday night. An earlier protest during the day was peaceful, but Noam said she posted National Guard troops nearby in case things turned violent. She condemned the vandalism and other unrest, calling it an end run around public discourse. She said she looked forward to having a dialogue with advocates from the Black community on how to improve policing. That conversation is something that one organizer would welcome. Julian Bodine, who organized the Sioux Falls protest and is a state highway trooper, said he would meet with Noam if given the opportunity. He had several ideas for how policing could change, but described more systemic changes that would allow what he called oppressed minorities to have a say in police tactics. There has to be an understanding of the community first, so we're not just treating the problem, but the root of the problem, he said. Bodine said he feels that many South Dakota police officers were outraged by the death of Floyd, but have not been empowered to come alongside protests or change their tactics when people are in danger. Laura Renee Chandler, another protest organizer and director of the South Dakota African American History Museum, said she would also advocate for more transparency in police departments. Turning now, here's a very short caption under a graphic. This one's by Tim Hines of the Journal. Another night of protests in Sioux City. A protester holds a sign towards a passing motorist during a third night of protests late Tuesday in downtown Sioux City at the police headquarters building. As of 11 p.m., about 100 people were protesting peacefully against last week's death of George Floyd, a Black man who died while in the custody of Minneapolis police. Here's a local crime story. Man charged with manslaughter for Winnebago woman's death. This one's by Nick Heitrick of the Journal. A Winnebago, Nebraska man has been charged in federal court with manslaughter for killing a woman whose burned remains were found near a remote cabin on the Winnebago Indian Reservation. A complaint filed in U.S. District Court in Omaha charges Jonathan Rooney, 20, with one count of manslaughter in Indian Country in connection with the May 16th death of 22-year-old Cozy Decora of Winnebago. Rooney remains in custody and awaits preliminary and detention hearings. If found guilty, he would face up to 15 years in prison. Unsealed Wednesday, the complaint said Decora, who was engaged to Rooney, according to her Facebook page, had called Winnebago police at 7:50 p.m. on May 16th and told them that she, Rooney, and their infant son had gotten their vehicle stuck on a muddy road in a remote area of the reservation. Officers located a GMC Yukon but did not find anyone. 2 Winnebago conservation officers noticed a fire in a nearby outhouse next to a cabin where they found Rooney sleeping naked under a blanket on a mattress on the floor with his 4-month-old son. They observed a blood smear or bruising on Rooney's arm, scratches on Rooney's arm and on his shoulder, and an injury on his cheek. Examining the fire, the officers found what they believed to be bones and a human skull. Rooney told them he did not know where Decora was. During an interview, Rooney told authorities the couple had found the cabin and started a fire in the grill to dry his clothes. They began to argue after Decora asked him if he had been drinking or using drugs. He said Decora hit him with something. He pushed her out of the cabin, shut the door, and laid down on the mattress. The next thing he was aware of, he said, was the officers shining a light in his face. Rooney told officers that Decora frequently cut her wrists and blamed him for it in an attempt to get their three children taken away from him. Rooney also said he thought he maybe had been drugged and Decora had set him up to go to prison for killing her. A preliminary breath test did not detect the presence of alcohol or drugs in Rooney, the complaint said. Investigators searching the cabin found blood droplets on the floor and door and what appeared to be a bloody handprint on a piece of wood on top of the grill. When asked if there had been a fight that got out of control, Rooney told investigators he was backed into a corner, then later asked for a lawyer, and the interview was ended. An autopsy could not determine if there was trauma to Decora's body before it was burned. Her remains were identified using dental records. Bush wins GOP nod in House District 3. Cherokee County Supervisor Dennis Bush has won a close race for the Republican nomination in the Iowa House District 3 race. Bush, a Cleghorn farmer, received 2,147 votes to 1,897 for retired school superintendent Lynn Evans of Aurelia and 1,132 for Mark McHugh of Sheldon. The seat is currently held by Republican Representative Dan Houseman of Aurelia, who is not running for re-election after 26 years in office. No Democrats filed to run in the heavily Republican district. House District 3 includes Cherokee and O'Brien counties, plus portions of Plymouth and Sioux counties. Another brief. Huddleston wins Democratic primary in District 11. Storm Lake, Iowa. Sarah Huddleston has earned a second shot at incumbent Gary Worthen in Iowa House District 11. Huddleston, a legal assistant from Storm Lake, defeated retired college professor James Eliason of Storm Lake 781-339 Tuesday to earn the Democratic nomination. She will face Republican Gary Worthen, who was unopposed while seeking his seventh term. Worthen defeated Huddleston in 2016. Results are unofficial. Huddleston previously served three terms on the Storm Lake City Council. When elected to her first term, she was the first Latina elected to public office in the state. District 11 includes Buena Vista and Sac counties. You are listening to the reading of the Sioux City Journal for Thursday, June 4th, 2020, on IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind. Now let's turn to today's obituaries. From Iowa City, Iowa, formerly of Sioux City, William Anderson. William B. Anderson, 62, originally from Sioux City, passed away Saturday, May 30th, 2020, in Iowa City. Graveside services will be in Graceland Park Cemetery. Arrangements are under the direction of Morningside Chapel, Christy Smith Funeral Homes. William Anderson was born on June 6, 1957, in Sioux City. He grew up in the area and graduated from North High School. He then went on to attend the University of Iowa. Bill lived in Iowa City until his passing. He enjoyed fishing and the outdoors. From Sioux City, Jean M. Bronger. Jean M. Bronger, spelled B-R-A-U-N-G-E-R, age 80, of Sioux City, passed away from cancer on June 2, 2020 at home, surrounded by her family. Due to COVID-19 restrictions, there will not be a funeral mass. There will be a CDA rosary at 4 p.m. Friday, with the family present from 6 to 8 p.m., and a prayer service at 7 p.m. at Meyer Brothers Colonial Chapel. Private burial will be in Calvary Cemetery. Jean was born in Carroll, Iowa, on March 26, 1940, to Edward and Lorraine Willey. She moved to Sioux City in 1954. Jean graduated from Helan High School in 1958 and from Briarcliff College in 1962. She was married on August 5, 1961, to Anthony J. Brauger, the love of her life. Jean was a dedicated wife and a devoted mother to her 7 children. She will be forever remembered for her amazing love of family and devotion to her faith. Jean was a teacher and an active member of Blessed Sacrament School and Parish. She was a member of Girls of 68 and the Catholic Daughters. Jean was honored to be named Catholic Daughter of the Year in 2013. She was a loving and caring mother and grandmother, always putting family first. Every holiday was a wonderful celebration, with memories and traditions that will forever be cherished. Birthdays were always extra special, with planning the menu for the day, starting with breakfast in bed and for the topper, a homemade cake. We thank God for the gift of her life and the blessing of the time we spent with her. She was a day brightener, always had a smile on her face, and never uttered an uncharitable word. Donations will be given to Blessed Sacrament Catholic Church, the Carmelite Monastery, and the Hospice of Sioux Lend. From Lamars, Iowa, Kathleen Bray, age 71, died Wednesday, June 3, 2020. Private memorial service, Rex Winkle Funeral Home, Lamars. Visitation, June 6, 2 to 5 p.m. at the funeral home. From Sioux City, Patricia J. Everingham, age 88, died Sunday, May 31, 2020. Memorial service, June 8, 10 a.m., Meyer Brothers Colonial Chapel. Burial, Calvary Cemetery. From South Sioux City, Florentine Amador Cruz, age 66, died Thursday, May 28, 2020. Service, June 6, 10:30 a.m., St. Michael's Catholic Church, South Sioux City. Burial, St. Michael's Cemetery. Visitation, June 5, 5 to 7 p.m., Moore and Becker Hunt Funeral Home. From Sioux City, Dr. Gary R. Carlton, age 73, died Tuesday, June 2, 2020. Service at a later date, Meyer Brothers Colonial Chapel. From Hartley, Iowa, Marianne Bobolz, spelled B-O-B-O-L-Z. Marianne Bobolz, 86, of Hartley, passed away Tuesday, June 2, 2020, at Community Memorial Health Center in Hartley. Private graveside services will be 1:30 p.m. Saturday in Pleasant View Cemetery, Hartley, with the Reverend Chris Nitzel officiating. Arrangements are under the direction of the Warner Funeral Home in Spencer, Iowa. Condolences may be sent online to www.warnerfuneralhome.com. Mary Ann, the daughter of Julius and Hilda Stephen Peterson, was born on October 13, 1933, in Sutherland, Iowa. Her family lived for 1.5 years near Sutherland and Moneta, Iowa, then moved to farm near Hartley. She attended rural schools until the 5th grade, when she attended Hartley Public Schools, graduating from Hartley High School in 1952. She was baptized on March 20, 1941, and confirmed on May 25, 1947, at St. Paul's Lutheran Church in Hartley. Mary Ann married Curtis Dale Bobolz on June 3, 1956, at St. Paul's Lutheran Church in Hartley. After their marriage, they continued to live in Hartley, where she raised her family and worked as a bookkeeper for Security State Bank for 6 years, Community Memorial Hospital for 31 years, and the City of Hartley for 7 years, until her retirement in 2001. She was an active member of St. Paul's Lutheran Church in Hartley, where she was a Sunday school teacher. She was also a member of Ladies' Aid, the Couples Club, Aid Association for Lutherans, and the American Legion Auxiliary. From Sioux City, Joanne Stanwyck, 83, of Sioux City, died Friday, May 29, 2020, at a local nursing home. Private graveside services will be held. Arrangements are under the direction of Waterbury Funeral Services of Sergeant Bluff. Joanne was born on September 3, 1936, near Sloan, Iowa, the daughter of Harry and Velma Worrell Christensen. She grew up in the Sloan and Salix area, attending school there. Joanne married Joseph S. Stanwyck on April 24, 1954. They made their home in Sioux City. Over the years, Joanne worked at Regency Square, formerly Green Acres. Joseph died on June 30, 2016. Joanne enjoyed shopping up until she couldn't. Memorials may be directed to Maitre d' Immaculate Conception Catholic Church or to Noah's Hope. From Lecanto, Florida, formerly of South Sioux City, Jerry W. Audus, spelled A-U-D-U-S. Jerry W. Audus, 69, of Lecanto, formerly of South Sioux City, died on April 6, 2020, in Lecanto, after an 8-year-long battle with cancer. A celebration of life service will be 2 p.m. on June 26 at Bradley Community Center in Bradley, South Dakota. Arrangements are under the direction of Furness Funeral Home of Clark, South Dakota. Jerry was born on March 24, 1951, in Morris, Minnesota, to James and Edith Artis. He grew up in Bradley, graduating from Bradley High School. He continued his education at Lake Area Tech in Watertown, South Dakota. He later moved to Houston, Texas, to attend more schooling and earn his bachelor's degree in engineering. Jerry worked for Sabre Communications for several years before opening his own business, American Tower and Structures. He retired in 2006. From Sioux City, Edward A. Nelson. Edward Anthony Nelson, age 88, of Sioux City, died Sunday, May 31st, 2020, at Westwood Specialty Care in Sioux City. Services will be at 10 a.m. Saturday at Morningside Chapel, Christy Smith Funeral Homes, with the Reverend Liz Tucker officiating. Burial will be in Memorial Park Cemetery. Visitation with the family will be 5 to 7 p.m. Friday at the funeral home. Social distancing for the visitation and funeral must be followed. Ed was born in Fargo, North Dakota, to William Herberg and Margaret Mary Elizabeth Fowler on May 20, 1932. He attended Catholic schools in Fargo until the sixth grade. He served his country during the Korean War as a member of the U.S. Army. Ed drove a container truck for Sioux City milk producers for many years. He also drove a semi for M&M Transfer and parked cars for Paradise Park. In his spare time, he would fix cars at his own small repair shop. In retirement, he was the maintenance man at Regency Mobile Home Park. He married Mary Rouse, and to this union, 3 children were born, Paula, Rhonda, and Curtis. Family would like to thank the nursing care from the hospice. 2 thumbs up from Ed. From Sioux City, Lois M. Hardy, age 94, died Tuesday, June 2, 2020. Service, June 6, 9:30 a.m., Meyer Brothers Morningside Chapel. Burial, St. Joseph Cemetery, Neptune, Iowa. Visitation, June 6, 8:30 to 9:30 a.m., at the funeral home. From Mapleton, Iowa, Myron D. Rosell, age 71, died Thursday, May 28, 2020. Service, June 6, 10 a.m., Meyer Brothers Colonial Chapel, Sioux City. Visitation, June 5, 5 to 7 p.m. at the funeral home. From Merrill, Iowa, Lynn A. Carlson, age 74, died Tuesday, June 2, 2020. Private Family Services, Meyer Brothers Colonial Chapel of Sioux City. And that leaves us, we have now concluded the obituaries. We're going to go to an article by Brett Hayworth for the Journal about the South Dakota GOP primary. There's a recount possible. North Sioux City. The quest by 2 current South Dakota Republican officeholders to win the same primary competition ended up so close on Tuesday night that a recount may be held. Voters in Southeast South Dakota, in primary voting, sought to trim the field of candidates in three contests for the state legislature for the November general election. However, in Senate District 17, incumbent Art Rausch of Vermilion barely held off the challenge of another current Republican officeholder, State Representative Nancy Rasmussen of Hurley, who was seeking to move from the House to the Senate. The South Dakota Secretary of State office reported that both got 50% of the vote, with Rausch at 1,002 votes and Rasmussen with 996. Oh my gosh, you guys, that's a difference of, what, 6 votes? Therefore, a possible recount could ensue, the recap said. The top 2 vote-getters in the House races claimed their party's nomination. In House District 16, incumbent representatives David Anderson, Republican of Hudson, got 38%, and Kevin Jensen, Republican of Canton, received 33% of the vote. They were opposed by Bill Shorma of Dakota Dunes, who received 28%. Coincidentally, those 3 men faced off in the 2016 primary after Shorma, a former state senator, was term-limited in that chamber. In House District 17, the Republican results showed Sidney Davis of Burbank at 41% and Richard Vassegard of Centerville with 28%. While Charles Clute of Vyborg and Dan Werner of Dalton each got 16% of the vote. District 16 covers Union County and part of Lincoln County, and District 17 includes Clay County. In South Dakota, voters elect 2 state representatives and 1 state senator from each of the 35 legislative districts. There were no competitive Democratic primaries on Tuesday, as all Democrats running in districts 16, 7, and 18 move onto the November ballot. I think we can turn now to opinions. There's 2 letters to the editor, which I'll read. The first one comes to us from Todd Siefker, S-I-E-F-K-E-R, of Sioux City. It's entitled, "It's Time for Reflection." For the last 75 years, we've been winning. That prosperity has led to a childish narcissism that has stymied our maturity as a nation. Even our sense of purpose and identity has largely been based on the combination of toys we can accumulate. Now we're losing. 106,181 dead from the virus. Explosive rioting over racial injustice. 40 million unemployed, incomprehensible debt. Yet this strangely provides us with an opportunity for growth. But first we need to reflect on how we got here. Reflect on both our individual biases as well as the systemic societal structures embedded with racial prejudice and brutal economic disparity. Reflect on how our gluttonous consumption is linked to our mind-blowing debt and environmental devastation. Reflect on whether the story we've told ourselves about ourselves has made us any healthier or happier. Growing up is a shift from what about me to what about you. We abandoned the me-centered 1920s and matured as a nation during the Great Depression and the World War II. Personal freedom became less important than the collective good. Sacrifice for a common cause became the new normal. These days, our culture, economy, and government have regressed into a little baby, blaming everyone else and looking out for personal gain amid so much suffering. The coming election won't make us suddenly grow up. It's on us to grow up. It's on us to stop the blame and acknowledge our own contributions to this mess and move from a me-centered life to a you-centered life. And again, that letter is from Todd Siefker of Sioux City. The next letter to the editor, to the journal, Sioux City, is from Joseph Dillinger of Sioux City. It's entitled, "Embrace Equality." In a conference call with governors about the recent riots and protest over George Floyd's death, President Trump said, "You have to dominate." The reality is that is part of the problem. When people are dominated, kept down, treated less than human, given less than basic health care, allowed to live in substandard housing, aren't provided schools where they can achieve at high standards, denied basic human rights, and police are allowed to use excessive force that sometimes kills them, eventually the people will rise up, and unfortunately there's going to be violence we see nightly on TV and the internet. Should we be shocked by these actions? No. We as a country did the same thing when we felt oppressed by the English. The result? A free country, or at least free for some. All these protesters want is the same freedoms that most of us enjoy. One of the mottos of our country is, all men are created equally. Let's start making that a reality today and treat all of our sisters and brothers as children of God, a God who loves us all equally, who made us in his image. Jesus said, "Whenever you did this to the least one of mine, you did it to me." Perhaps we need to also understand that this applies in the same way when we mistreat our sisters and brothers in Christ. When we mistreat them, we mistreat the God who is all loving. And again, that's by Joseph Dillinger of Sioux City. And the journal has its own opinion. So this one is written by the editors of the Sioux City Journal. It's entitled, "This Pandemic Isn't Over." Did we miss the story about discovery of a vaccine for the coronavirus? Because many Americans, too many in fact, are acting as if the pandemic is over. At the same time governors take steps to reopen their states, social distancing precautions appear to be declining. Example, from Coney Island to Daytona Beach to Lake of the Ozarks to Venice Beach and beyond, largely unmasked throngs flock to public places by the hundreds to celebrate the Memorial Day holiday weekend, video and still photos showed. As the weather warms up, we won't be surprised to see many more such scenes, unfortunately. It's as if a huge swath of this nation put up a mission accomplished sign. Well, hold on. U.S. coronavirus numbers continue to climb, approaching 1.9 million confirmed cases and more than 108,000 deaths as we write this. New concern, U.S. Surgeon General Dr. Jerome Adams told Politico in an interview published on Monday, he expects new outbreaks of the coronavirus resulting from the nationwide protests over the death of George Floyd. In other words, the coast isn't clear. Don't get us wrong. We understand and support measured steps to reopen businesses and public places with proper safeguards in place. We can't keep our country locked down completely until a vaccine is available, something unlikely until next year. However, what we believe also needs to happen is this. Americans should follow whatever new rules exist, should continue to heed the advice of health experts, and should remain vigilant in protecting themselves and others by continuing to practice the precautions to which we have become so accustomed since this global pandemic began spreading across the U.S. several months ago. Evidence exists of progress in flattening the curve, but if Americans, by and large, begin to act as if we have absolutely nothing to worry about anymore, we fear another surge will reverse the gains we have made as a country and send us back inside our homes again. No one wants to see that happen. Okay, I think we can turn to sports now, you guys. So, here we go. The first sports story is golf. Interstate amateur begins on Saturday. Sioux City. Golf has provided a lot of folks with much-needed relief from the COVID-19 pandemic this spring. Courses throughout the area have been busy, and we've already got one major tournament in the books. Adam Fields came from behind to win the Tri-State Masters a couple of weeks ago, and will be on hand this weekend for the 83rd Interstate Amateur at Two Rivers Golf Club. Fields won the Interstate 2 years ago as part of a spectacular season in which he claimed Three of the four majors. The Council Bluffs, Iowa resident also copped the Tri-State Masters, Rivercade, and Men's City titles in 2018. Sioux Cityan Brian Evans enters as the defending champion, having recorded a one-shot win over Fields. Three-time Interstate winner Nick Dreckman and former Northwestern College standout Colton Kuima from Sioux Falls will also be in the field. A field of 96 will tee off from both the number 1 and number 10 tees in the opening round on Saturday. The second round is slated for Sunday. We're thankful and grateful we can provide a safe atmosphere for people where they can feel comfortable and can enjoy themselves, said tournament director and Two Rivers head pro Rod Slater. The course has never been busier for two reasons. One, because of that, and we've had some pretty good weather, and the course is in good shape, and there's a lot of excitement about the golf course. Two Rivers, of course, is a narrow tree-lined layout that requires accuracy more than anything. Slater says the greens are rolling as good or better. The field, according to Slater, will consist mainly of players from the Sioux City area. That's not to say that there won't be plenty of talented shot makers on hand. The Interstate has always attracted a strong contingent of players, and this year should be no exception. Last year was a breakthrough for Evans, a 47-year-old veteran who won with a 36-hole total of 145, or 4 over par. He held his own against a young field, many of whom will return this weekend. The Interstate begins a busy month as far as positioning for Siouxland Player of the Year points. Fields, of course, has jumped out to the early lead with his tri-state win at Green Valley. Cherokee Golf Course will host the 85th Sioux Valley Amateur Match Play on June 20th and 21st, and the Ridge Midsummer Open will be played on June 27th in Sioux Center, Iowa. Kudos to the staff at Buena Vista University Golf Course at Lake Creek for reviving the Lake Creek Amateur last week. Lake Creek is a course near and dear to my heart, as not only was I a member for a number of years back in the day, but also had a chance to cover several of the Lake Creek arms while working for the Storm Lake Pioneer Tribune in the early 1980s. A strong field took part, and it came down to a playoff won by University of Sioux Falls golfer Jack Evans over Johnny Douglas of Morningside College and Johnny Spellerberg of Bennington, Nebraska, who was a high finisher in the Tri-State Masters. Thanks to longtime former Journal colleague Tim Gallagher for providing magnificent coverage of an event that will no doubt pick up significant steam over the next years. By the way, in case you don't already know, the PGA Tour returns to action next week. I, for one, am looking forward to watching golf again on television, even if there won't be any galleries. Golf, I believe, is the sport that can get by the easiest without fans in the stands. Here's local holes-in-ones. Local golfers have made holes-in-ones this season, and to report a hole-in-one, you just call the Journal at 712-293-4243 or email jsports@siouxcityjournal.com. Rhonda McCabe. Rhonda McCabe's hole-in-one came on Monday, June 1st at Green Valley Golf Course in Sioux City. The hole-in-one happened on hole number 13, which is 150 yards. She used a driver. The witness was Diane Limoges. Evan Schultz. Schultz's hole-in-one came on Friday, May 29th at Sun Valley Golf Course in Sioux City. The hole-in-one happened on hole number 4, which is 103 yards. Schultz used a gap wedge. The witnesses were Levi Meese and Luke Longvall. Daryl Emick. Daryl Emick's hole-in-one came on Friday, May 29th at Sun Valley Golf Course in Sioux City. The hole-in-one happened on hole number 3, which is 87 yards. Emick used a 9-iron. The witness was Ralph Schroeder. Ray Riefenrath. Riefenrath's hole-in-one happened on Thursday, May 28th at Two Rivers Golf Course in Dakota Dunes. The hole-in-one happened on hole number 15, which is 145 yards. Reifenrath used a 9-iron. The witnesses were Jim Tritz, Tim Van Persem, and Brian LaFleur. Ken South. South's hole-in-wall came on Wednesday, May 27th, at Floyd Park Golf Course in Sioux City. The hole-in-one happened on hole number 16, which is 80 yards. He used a pitching wedge. The witnesses were Dave Corzine, Henry Henschel, and Ron Quinney. Well, that concludes the reading of the Sioux City Journal for today. I'm going to bring us back to today's weather in Sioux City real quickly. Today, we're expecting a high of 86 and a low of 64. And thunderstorms are expected to start in the afternoon in Sioux City with a severe thunderstorm this evening in Sioux City. Well, thank you for listening to my reading of the Sioux City Journal on Thursday, June 4th, 2020. I'm your volunteer reader, Amy B., and I was helped by Mutt the Cat and by Dibs the Dog. You can access a recording of today's reading on our website, iowaradioreading.org, at any time. Thanks for listening.